What shall we look at today?
This is Michael.
Yes, Michael.
I'm really enjoying the assignment that came out on Friday, and I recorded that, and I've been listening to it on loop, and there are some great lines in there. One of them is about believing that I am the exception to the perfection of the universe, and, you know, just the way the whole thing is written is beautiful, and it's just so great to see the whole. It's like, how did they know what's going on in my mind? You know, how did they know that?
yeah. The write up is such a reflection of the human experience, and it sounds like really able to relate to that and recognize that's they're saying that piece is written exactly with what's going on in my head. How did they know that? It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And there was something in there about how the quote serves neither, how the guilt serves neither God nor our fellows. Mm-hmm. And then I think the next line was something about, guilt doesn't serve us, but it sure serves ego. Mm-hmm. And the sense I get from my own experience and from the reading, too, is that the feeling bad and the guilt is just so all-consuming mm-hmm. in terms of my attention. And also that, you know, I've been trained that's how I atone for my sins. Mm-hmm. But what I've realized through practice is that the self-hate and the feeling bad after I've done something perhaps unskillful is obscuring that the opportunity for learning that is there in that moment.
Yeah. So seeing that you've been conditioned to think that atoning and feeling bad when perhaps we've done something unskillful is the way to go, is the right thing to do. And as you saw in the reading, it pointed out that serves, feeling bad serves neither God nor our fellows, and really what it does is consume all of the attention and then also to obscure any learning that would be available in that the aftermath of having done, you know, something maybe unskillful.
Yeah, and I saw kind of at a deeper level, you know, we talk about those things as unskillful, not as mistake or something wrong. You know, and we do that for specific reason, to take the feeling bad out of it. But what landed for me at a deeper level is that being unskillful, there's nothing wrong with being unskillful. It's how we learn. I mean, how is my unskillfulness going to be revealed so I can learn from it other than me being unskillful? So it's good.
Yeah, what a great thing to see, and to that being unskillful, and even the language is intentional to take any kind of notion of it being wrong or a mistake or anything out of it, and that how else are we going to learn unless we were to actually get, you know, do something unskillful, see it, recognize it, and then have that space to actually learn from it. How else would that take place? That's really what the opportunity is in that.
Yeah. And I remember we used to talk about, what did we say, we dropped feeling bad in 2013. So mm-hmm. we're going to have a 10th anniversary of dropping feeling bad next year. So it's just, it's so counter to the conditioning, and yet that's the way to clarity, is to drop the feeling bad and be here so I can see whatever life's revealing to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that dropping the feeling bad is really key. It's key to our being able to see the clarity and learning something from that, from the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, this is Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Hi. Let's see what comes up. Yesterday, I guess it was, I was looking at, or I was, you know, looking at actually watching a conference, and I got a couple of things that I thought were pretty amazing out of it that really I was looking at this morning, or that didn't actually, it just dropped in while I was meditating, that, you know, when I'm looking at, like, when I resist something, when there's, when conditioning comes up with resistance, somehow it's made to link with something that I don't want to do. It'll say, oh, you don't want to do that or something. So there's this, you know, this resistance.
Mm-hmm. So you're seeing it dropped in that there's this resist. When resistance comes up, it's linked to something you don't want to do.
Yeah, it's what it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it comes up. What I'm seeing is that that's what conditioning would like me to think. So therefore, this thing that it says I don't want to do or afraid to do or can't do or whatever it is why there's this resistance, and you know I have to push through it.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do this thing. But what I'm seeing is that it's resistance itself that is just a plain habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think mm-hmm. this is anything new, but it just really occurred to me that that resistance itself is only a habit, and it can come up with anything. Because I've been mm-hmm. noticing things that that I just do, and there's sometimes it'll just come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're seeing that there's a way that when the resistance comes up, what ego is hoping is that by linking it to, oh, I don't want to do this. You don't really want to do this. It's something that you know you want to avoid, and that is what it's hoping you will go with. But what you saw is that ego, that it's just a habit, that resistance just comes up, and it's just a habit, and it can get linked with anything. But
yeah,
it just is a habit.
Yeah, it's a habit that you know, or we could call it avoidance. You know, I'm just avoiding what I have to do or and what I actually want to do, but there's this kind of avoidance, and that just seems to be another word for, well, you know, the ego resistance. And so, you know, what the practice is, of course, and what we need to do, and this is what I learned a little bit differently, is that we need to make a space between the resistance and the thing we have to do, which is what we're trained to do. We either record about it, or you know, breathe about it, or you know, just try, in a sense, move to a more centered place. And some, we have lots of tools to do that. But with that little space, then we have the abilities, if we have the willingness, in which we will, to move through that mm-hmm. resistance into the and or that avoidance into whatever it is. And it might not even be what that big thing that we're avoiding, but we have to move somewhere and somewhere mm-hmm. close in that direction. And I thought that just seems so helpful and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a way that when the condition, the resistance comes up, what can sort of be the immediate response is avoidance. Just kind of, I want to do that just to avoid, even if it's something you kind of want to do, you know, just to avoid that. And what you're seeing is that what is called for is that just to have a little space to move to a place that's a little more centered. And we have so many tools to do that, you know, to come to the breath or to record. But it's having that space that is really key to, you know, breaking the habit, to moving through the resistance that's there.
Yeah, what we can say is that, okay, so I feel the resistance. I just know I'm aware of it. I notice it, and that can give the space. Or now I want to record about it or whatever. And yet, and the next step seems to be moving, doing something. And then in that movement, you know, now that I'm, say, doing, I don't want to say just doing something, but actually moving, it's like I could just then move into the activity or the thing that I have been resisting. So it's like the habit is the resistance, not just the plain conditioning resistance or avoidance. And that's it seems like if we could break that particular habit, then by using our practice tools, like I said, noticing, and then having that space, I've been actually practicing with that, and it seems very helpful with that mentality in my head as I'm practicing.
Yeah, that approach of just noticing. So there it is. You see the resistance. You see the avoidance. See kind of what the habit would be. But what you've been practicing is just noticing. And there seems to then come the space, and then you add some movement, something just moving. And it can be in the direction of the thing that the ego is saying you want to avoid or whatever, but that seems to be a key piece in the breaking that habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even counting as a movement, you know, and then and breathing and, so anyhow, I just thought, that's what I've been seeing and whatever, and it's just, who knows, but it's something interesting to practice with, at least for me right now, so.
Yeah, very interesting to practice with, bringing in lots of tools, it sounds like.
Yes, because resistance will just come up all on its own sometimes when you know, it's like that, just like that movement of, okay, I want to get up and go over there, and you can feel if you're sitting down somewhere, you know, it's that movement at rest tends to stay at rest, movement in motion tends to stay in motion or wants to be in motion. So it's kind of like that. Oh, I have to get up.
This is really seeing the resistance popping up in all different place, and just seeing that way that you have been describing as a way to practice with that.
Yes, anyhow. So anyhow, just thought I'd participate with that.
thank you, Phil. Thanks for participating.
This is Jen.
This is Margaret.
Jim, and then Margaret.
Well, first, I love that, the space thing. What that takes me to so much is why the just noticing is so key, that it feels like sort of our only part, our only job, if you will, is to notice everything that obscures what we are. Because once there's that space, then there's just life living. There's nothing for me to do. I don't need to correct anything or try to make myself do anything. Or it's just once there's that space, life is living. There isn't that sort of eye on top of it.
Yeah, that noticing and that space is so key to the whole thing, because once that's there, once we're in that space, then we can, there's no I that's got to go do something or make someone do something or make myself do something, you know, then there's mm-hmm. just life living.
And I've really been looking at that with the guilt, and looking at it in specific with, you know, our interactions with, you know, what we do around the planet. Like, I think I talked about it actually sometime recently in group, maybe last Sunday or sometime. But given Sherry's, the New Beginnings blog a while back, where Sherry was talking about that, I think it came from a newspaper in the UK, of here are a list of whatever it was, number of things that one can do to really kind of, you know, care for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And having such a good workshop around that, and it fits perfectly with the guilt theme. right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I've seen so much about it, because one of the big things I saw in looking at it with the guilt thing is that it feels like, I can so see how deprivation has been a big thing in spiritual traditions forever and ever, because when it's like an ego, it's ego I taking over what is so powerful. And what's powerful is the realization that my well-being is unconditional. I don't have to be warm and well-fed and, you know, get all the things I'm told that I want, you know, basically avoid pain and get pleasure in order to be in well-being. And so I can see how it would seem like, okay, well, then I'm just going to deprive myself of all these things, because then I'll really get that. I'll really have that revelation. But what happens, at least for me anyway, because that completely gets taken over. And so if we go back to the, you know, all the things we can do to be good to the planet, I'm going to, you know, not eat meat, and I'm going to never get on an airplane, and I'm going to, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what I saw with that, sorry, do you want to?
Don't forget where you're going. Okay, let me catch up. So you know, there's a whole lot you're seeing around deprivation and the guilt thing and taking care of the planet and all these pieces that are kind of coming together, and you're looking at it in the sense of how you can recognize, how you can really see how deprivation has been kind of an ego takeover, especially in various spiritual traditions, because when the unconditional of, you know, I don't really need, I can be fine in whatever circumstances, that whole premise of, you know, of unconditional acceptance and well-being can then slide into a deprivation and doing without or grasping or pushing away or all of that kind of stuff. And you're seeing something about how that ties in with the taking care of the planet, I think.
So what I saw was in that, like, okay, you know, I'll be a vegetarian and I won't get on airplanes and I won't, you know, all the things that I'm going to do. It's just, it's one of those so obvious, and then we see it, have an experience of it. But, oh my goodness, that all keeps the I in place. And the I is the genesis of the entire thing of how we're interacting, of what's not working, about how we're interacting with the planet. Because it's all right? It's this illusion of a separate self, I, me, mine, I've got to get for me, I've got to make sure I have maximum pleasure, minimum pain. And so we do all these crazy things that give us the promise of, you know, getting what I want, but work against it. So then if I set out to essentially swing to the other side of the duality, it's not at all helpful to anything, including the planet, because all I'm doing is reinforcing the very process from which it's all sprung.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, if I'm tracking what you're saying, it's like the ego doesn't care which side of the duality we fall on. Either destroy the planet in pursuit of pleasure, or okay, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to eat meat. I'm not going to get on a plane. I'm not going to, the heaven the list. Because whatever happens in either of those places, as long as it's getting reinforced, as long as the I process is getting reinforced, it's still winning in a sense. Because because that very process that is on one side of duality isn't being maintained on the other.
Well, and as you're reflecting that, what I'm really seeing too is, and of course that's completely unsustainable, to make myself do X, Y, and Z, there's no way. And so eventually I'm going to have to swing to the other side of the duality where I deserve everything because look at how good I've been.
Yeah.
So,
that's how the destruction of the planet can be ensured, because you can't, it's not sustainable to never do anything that would, anything. But basically it's that process that's not, that we're stuck in. And so it's going to ensure that we're going to swing to the other side of the duality. And then, because I'm due, look at everything I've given up. Now I deserve all this other stuff.
Yeah, so enter the role of guilt, right?
Yeah.
Because what I was seeing when I looked at it is all guilt does is obscure, like that term that I've heard Ashwini use before came up with it, divine dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
So, sometimes we talk about it as hurts my heart. So I'll just bet you anything. First of all, if I've done something that I feel guilty about, I mean, who even knows, there's so much in it. But I was like, let's just say that I've done something that hurts my heart. Well, very likely that's happening because there's that illusion of a separation. And so I'm doing something to try to make myself feel better, which, from a place of compassion, it's like, well, who could blame her? Because it stinks to be separate from life when you're actually not, So instead of going to a place of exploration and compassion, which in my experience leads us directly to a sustainable place of doing what we actually want to do, because it comes from a place of deep connection and joy. And so I'm doing it because I truly want to do it, because it's just what life does, in a sense, back to the space. But with the guilt, instead, I'm left with nothing besides, okay, I better not do that. I won't do that anymore. Fine, I won't do that anymore. And to make myself do it, which again isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So the role of guilt in this whole thing is to keep us separate, or believing the separation, and obscure what might be called the divine dissatisfaction or the hurting of the heart, to obscure that, which is our realization or an act, of our connection to all that is. And from that place, we really can act from what the heart wants. This is what I really want. This is what's, however we want to talk about it, appropriate in this moment or whatever. But what guilt does is it keeps us in that, what you were talking about earlier, that feeling bad, reinforcing that system, a separate I.
Yeah. It just seemed like with the noticing, with the just noticing, all roads lead to compassion.
It's
really, truly, I always say this, but it feels like the gift of this practice. It's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with any of it. If it seems like there's something wrong, that's just a cue to explore. Okay, well then there's something obscured here, because there isn't anything wrong. So something there's something I'm believing that's not so.
Yeah, there's something I'm believing. Because if I'm in a place where something wrong, then I'm mm-hmm. stepped back. I'm stepped aside. I'm stepped away from the compassion. Because like you said, yeah. it's like, you know, from that place of compassion, that compassion can see, well, who can blame them? You know, it's an understanding. Mm-hmm. It's a being with. And so yeah. the flag mm-hmm. or the cue that this practice can, you know, has so taught us is to recognize when we're in something wrong, that it's really an mm-hmm. opportunity to explore, to look deeply,
yeah,
to drop that.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Margaret.
Hi, Rebecca. Well, this has been really helpful so far. At first, looking at guilt and the assignment, I had a similar reaction to looking at anger and basically looking at anger where I didn't see that I had any anger. And with guilt, what I was seeing yesterday about something that happened on Friday, that it felt like there was this, that I was doing, you know, in hindsight I could see I was doing the very best I could in the situation at hand. And yet, right after I would take some kind of a action or participate in this, and that what would come in is this feeling bad of I'm not doing enough here. Mm. There's got to be something more that I can do.
Mm.
And it feels like that's directly goes back to karmic stuff with my parents of I could do more to help them. If I could just be good, then there I would never get in trouble and there would never be these problems of them being mm-hmm. angry. So it kind of goes back to I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm. So you saw something that on Friday where you were in a situation and doing your best. You could see that you were doing your best. And then what would come in is this feeling bad that got the message really was that you're not doing enough. You're not. There should be more that you're doing. And it harkens back to a way that you have recognized that you were conditioned as a child that you should be doing more. That, I mean, it all boils down to you're not enough. That's the message.
Right. Kind of to, there's something wrong here, and I'm not enough because I can't fix it. I can't make this mm-hmm. better. And and I realized that what was truly there for me was just sadness about the situation that was unfolding, and my arms are injured. There were aspects of it that I actually couldn't do that someone else was helping me with, but I just felt, you know, that feeling bad. And then today I saw this. I just was noticing how seeing this process of not enough, and then sitting during meditation, this just force of ego distracting me with stories about the future, that it was really hard to drop it, to drop the stories and come back to the breath, because it was kind of enjoyable, and it just was very clear. It felt very clear that I've done that all my life, you know, go to stories about the future where it's going to be better than it is here now with this, you know, the situation at home. So it felt very karmic and just really helpful to see I guess it was what was shared earlier, the one of the quotes in there about how can I be the only imperfect, you know, the only exception to perfection?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
It makes it, it's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it sounds like seeing a lot that there. Let me catch up with a few things that reflect there. But there's one thing that you said that you were recognizing that what's under that feeling that is a real sadness of something that's happening, that they're just the way things are unfolding and there's nothing you seem to be able to do about it. That there's a sadness there, and then recognizing a familiar karmic pattern of sitting when you were sitting in meditation and seeing the stories come up of things. I think you said that they're going to be better in the future, that there were stories about the future and that they feel very compelling. Mm-hmm. It's hard to drop those and return to the breath because they come up. And then, you know, just lastly resonating with that line from the assignment that, you know, that you can't be the only exception to, you know, the humanity, the only imperfect, you know, I can't remember how the quote goes, but yeah, that you're not the only, you can't be the only exception.
Yes, and just loving this practice so much, and mm-hmm. its compassion, the compassion that's there if I can drop all of this and just be here and practice being in that space that was mentioned and what was just said, just noticing that, that that's there too.
Yes.
Which is hard when I'm caught up, but it's so helpful. And
just sounds like there's just a lot of gratitude for the practice that and where that gives us the training and the opportunity to recognize that just noticing, moving into that space where it's all can be exactly as it is, and just a real gratitude for that.
Yeah, and I you know, that one more thing is just arising about, mm-hmm. I was writing something about, that needed to have realization, or what I was choosing instead was make real for myself. And I loved the way, I think it was a Ashwini, in some, you know, quite a while ago, used that instead of realization of how that is to make real for ourselves. And there's just something so powerful about that. It's like it makes realization more alive to say make real.
So it's dropping in that the power of that word realization, as it was, as Winnie, you know, described it one time, to make real for oneself, and it feels like it's really resonating with you now. It really brings that word alive for you to realize something is to really make it real for oneself.
Yeah, and it's the process, I guess, that behind that making it real, or in that making it real, that just feels so just one way for me. I mean, that it makes practice, it's just, feels like it's just part of practice that gives me that gap between makes available that gap between the thoughts and the space. We're describing.
The practice is the, well, it's the process of giving us access to that gap, that space between the thoughts.
Yes, thank you. I think that's all for now.
Thank you, Margaret.
Esho.
Esho.
Sequoia.
Hey, Sequoia.
Good morning. Well, I've just been sitting here observing that kind of conditioned behavior of the reluctance to push the unmute button.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was looking at on the call on the radio show in the morning this week, you know, knowing that pushing that unmute button and being in conversation with a facilitator is like a way more safe place than being in a conversation about should I or should I not press the unmute button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so really watching this whole process of the conversation that gets going about not unmuting and not pushing the unmute button, and then recognizing, going to the inside of that, talking and participating in group and pushing the unmute button is a much safer place to be than with the conversation of not.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's something else that just dropped in this morning. Having had numerous experiences lately of being the recipient of the generosity of life, it just, I know Sherry has said a number of times, you know, ask and you shall receive is not just, I don't know if she used the word theory, but it's actually so, you know.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
Ask and you will receive. And I have been having that experience over and over again. And there's something about just pushing the button and speaking up and getting on calls that is, is an acknowledgement of that generosity and a participation with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so you've had a lot of experiences recently of the ask and you shall receive, of really being the recipient, and that it's not a theory, that it actually happens. And, mm-hmm. and just getting on the calls and pushing unmute is a way of I can't remember the verb you used, but it's, you know, it's a way of participating in that, of acknowledging it, that there is the generosity of life. And you know, and here it is. Here you are saying yes to that.
Yeah, that's what it just is. Yeah, it's just, it's like yes. It's just saying yes to that, and I'm just feeling like it's saying yes to it, and it's in a way it is saying yes to that. Not my will, but thy will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, just kind of use me how you will.
Yeah.
I can't see it, but, you know, but I'm willing to, yeah, I'm willing to say yes and participate in whatever way is available in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, so it's a yes to whatever, to not my will, but thy will be done. That if just
mm-hmm.
use me in whatever way. I can't see it. I don't know. But yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great.
Great.
And let's see if there's anything else. Um, and just a gusho and gratefulness that this is available, and yeah, and that there's just the willingness to participate from life. It's mm-hmm. it's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is a gusho moment, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. there it is, it's available. There's one side of the gusho, and then the participation, the other hand meeting it, right? And
mm-hmm.
and just in a deep gusho and gratitude for it all.
Yeah, just watching it all happen and the wonder mm-hmm. of it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's like to that space we've been talking about, right? The just watching it all happen and the wonder mm-hmm. of it all.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you.
This is Anna.
Anna.
I'm also experiencing a lot of gratitude. I'm having this time of realizing how happy I am mm. and how that really didn't used to be the case. And I'm just really taking in the transformation. And so it's that gratitude for practice.
Mm. Just realizing how happy you are. And that hasn't always been the case, but really taking it in and just the gratitude that's there with that.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing the connection between just noticing and the experience of that capital H happiness, that unconditional happiness.
So seeing the connection between the just noticing and the capital H happiness.
Yeah, because one of the things I really appreciating about just noticing is how it keeps me out of thinking, because if I'm just noticing, then there's something in this moment to notice. So I'm not going to let attention go to thinking about what I noticed the moment before. It really just keeps attention here and here and here.
Yeah, so what you're seeing about the noticing is that it assists you to stay out of thinking. Because if we're in the process of just noticing, then there's something to notice in this moment, this moment, this moment. You don't want to leave that noticing to go back and think about something from a previous moment, because then you're not noticing what's in this moment.
Right, right. It's like I don't want to miss what's here to notice now.
Yeah.
So that becomes more my experience than feeling like I want to think about or learn something from or get, you know, kind of reach some conclusion about what I just noticed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, So you don't want to miss the noticing of the current moment. It's because it's just not as interesting, or it's not. You don't want to leave this to go back and think about, and you know, what something that has already happened, that's already passed through the thinking process.
Right, right, and it really deepens that experiential knowing of the difference between thinking and paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between thinking and just noticing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like it really clearly differentiates those two processes, helping you really see the difference between just presence and noticing and thinking.
Right, right, which really took me a long, long time to catch on to, that thinking is not the same as paying attention. I remember a long, long time into practice having that first inkling of, oh, paying attention is a different process, not the same as thinking.
Yeah, yeah. It can take a really long time to get the difference between those two, right? That, paying attention is not the same as thinking.
Right, and how it's all the same, or the experience is that it's all the same place or the same process, the space between the thoughts, just noticing, happy, and how it's a time right now of experiencing that as more real than whatever's going on in the mind.
So it feels like there's the different ways that we talk about it, the space between the thought, happy, just noticing that you're in a time right now where that feels more real than the thinking, than what's going on in the mind.
Right. And there's just so much gratitude for that.
So much gratitude.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you, Anna.
This is Michael.
Michael.
That resonated, just noticing the happiness that I experience now, the capital H happiness, and just incredibly grateful for this opportunity and all of the practice opportunities, and just recognizing the transformation that happens.
So that really resonated, that for you too, that really recognizing that being in the capital H happiness and just evoking, you know, bringing up so much gratitude for that recognition and how real that is in your life.
Yes. And one thing I'm noticing now is that I'm without my two children for like 4, 5, 6 days because they're off visiting their grandparents. And I think that's kind of like the first time ever that I've had so much time away from them. And I'm just loving the quiet in the house. You know, I love them when they're around, and now I'm loving them when they're gone. And it's different, and yet it's the same. And it's also kind of related to that of recognition of practice and just enjoying the silence and the happiness and not thinking about things.
Yeah, so you're in a different experience, like it, circumstantially, where the kids are gone, and so you're enjoying all of the silence in the house. You know, it's not, you know, you love them when they're gone, you love them when they're here, but this is the really first time you've had that experience, gotten to have that experience for these 4 or 5 days. And so to realize that that's such a conducive, but I'm projecting that conducive to that silence, and recognizing that that way to practice in that environment with the noticing and the just presence.
Yes, yes. And what I saw as you're reflecting that is the just the unconditional nature of the happiness, you know, regardless of the circumstances or the conditions. And of course, I will be unhappy again, no doubt. And, you know, that's what I'm practicing. I'm practicing to be happy here, now, in this moment, whether kids are around or not around or whatever's going on.
Yeah, yeah, really speaking to the unconditional nature of the happiness, the capital H happiness, that no matter what is there, you're practicing with that and practicing in that space, that well-being.
Yes, yes, yes. And looking at it also with this medical challenge that I'm looking at, to be, you know, unconditionally okay, no matter what happens with that, no matter what I choose, no feeling bad, no regrets, and really, really being open to life. We were talking about ask and ye shall receive, so life, I'm looking for help here, looking for answers, give me a direction, and just being open to that and being okay with whatever happens.
Yeah, yeah. So with this other workshop, this other content in your life with the medical challenges, really looking at that ask and you shall receive, and there you are, you're asking. Okay, life, I need direction, help. help me here, and you're there, open, ready, and willing, and able to receive through that, you know, whatever life is guiding you.
Yeah, yeah. So just really grateful for everything. So thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
This is Ashwini.
Ashwini.
So a lot of noticing, and a couple of things that I one of the things to be so grateful about in this practice is how much the same things are true at deeper and deeper levels. That something that I understood on the surface suddenly becomes so clear, so much clearer at the depth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so seeing a lot of noticing and seeing how things that we hear and can see at one level just become so clear. The same things get deeper and deeper and deeper and clearer with that depth.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've been looking at lately is drop the conversation, right? I mean, that's something that we say all the time, but not recognize, I mean, and practice all the time and redirect attention from, I mean, it is what we do, but then all of a sudden to realize the true benefit of it in a particular circumstance, and particular circumstance being energy. So in sort of big time, the level of friction that is caused because the conversation is going on sort of moves one into a place of, well, I don't want to interact with somebody, or I don't want to collaborate with somebody, or I don't want to include somebody, or I don't want to update somebody because there's so much exhaustion involved in that process, or energy involved in that process, and to realize that the only friction that's being caused is by the conversation, and so not listening to the conversation, not indulging the conversation in any way, just frees up so much space. I mean, it's not new, but there's a way in which it seems to be, we arrive at that point of total unwillingness to indulge because we see so clearly how counterproductive it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the depth that you're seeing around what we talk about all the time in practice, which is to drop the conversation, and recognizing that there's so much friction in the energy around being in a conversation with conditioned mind, that it sounds like when you've seen it, how the resistance can play out is, oh, I don't want to update someone, I don't want to interact with someone, I don't want to do this, I don't want to, you know, engage with that person or collaborate. And what you saw is that when the conversation is dropped, the internal conversation is dropped, there's so much friction that it falls away, and then the energy is there to do whatever is being then asked of you to do. And just seeing that, just, you know, it's one, you know, we know it on one level, but it sounds like a real real experience of it on a deeper and deeper level.
Yes, that there's no longer, so it's almost like you get to the end of something and a place of exhaustion almost, and you go, and I go to, okay, just tell me what to do, right? Because I don't want to think about it, I don't want to, But that place, that reaching that place of surrender or resignation, not surrender, is really because of the battering one receives internally. It's really it's something. Someone said it in the call earlier, right? The deflection is making it about the content and never making it about the conversation. Because the solve is always in the conversation, in dropping the conversation, not in the solving the content of the conversation. And so to recognize that the conversation is actually superfluous in most cases, but in essence, a source of opposition or maintaining something against the flow of life, that just surrendering the conversation makes one flow so much better. So much more is available at one's disposal in terms of energy if that's not sort of running at the same time.
Yeah, that we can get at such a point where it's just exhausting. And then to realize that it's never the content that has been exhausting, it's the conversation. And that as we get clearer and clearer on that, we get better at surrendering that conversation and recognizing the source of that battering and that exhaustion, and that is really only ever being in the conversation. And we can just let that go and then reap the benefits of that, of getting out of that and letting the energy not, because it's such a drag on life's energy. It's like stepping back into the flow of life's energy when we can do that, to drop that conversation.
Yeah, because in another way, the conversation is an identity, and that feels very sort of convex. The image that I get around that is the empty teacup, right? It's so full, it can't hold anything more. And so what tends to happen, the pushback, the reaction to having, to being identified and being a full cup of tea, in the metaphoric sense of the koan, is simply that the reaction to life or to any request from life is, I can't do it because there's no room for it. Rather than, wait a second, if I empty the teacup, then there's more space. What is filling the teacup is not essential.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's so good. That is so good with that image, that metaphor, that what is filling the teacup is not essential. And so when we can see that, there's something, I'm feeling too full and feeling overwhelmed or pushing away or whatever, then to recognize that what is maybe available in that moment of recognition is emptying the teacup. And it seems important to realize that there's that even that resistance, that conversation is an identity that can be dropped. As you said, it's not essential. It's not a part of what's really what's real.
And that's that train. The movement is be concave, like open, empty, rather than assert even more. Right, which is what the conditioning is attempting to do, trying to basically say, okay, well, no, I can't do this right now, go away, or whatever it is that the reaction is.
It's the
identity. And so the training to recognize that the shape of that conversation simply means that the cup is full and that the movement needs to be emptying the teacup.
That's so good.
And then
do it. Is that what you said?
Yeah, and to do it.
Yeah, to make that movement. To make that movement to the concave, emptiness, open, dropping the unessential, and there it is. There's the movement that's called for, and we're training in that way to recognize it and then do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all.